Hey, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. Build a customized renter's policy with American Family Insurance so you can protect your tandem bike on the go.
Thief!
Oh, he is struggling with that two-seater. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Some exclusions may apply. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 20.
Hello everyone and welcome back to The Dark Paranormal, Season 20, Episode 8. And that means next week already is our penultimate episode. I genuinely do not believe it flew so fast. But they do say time flies whilst you're having fun. They don't necessarily say whilst you're terrified, but that does seem to be the case, because I genuinely believe the experiences we've covered this season have outshone any season we've done prior. Now, we are, of course, looking forward already to season 21, and we did state a while back we were just going to drop the numbers of seasons and just call the show The Dark Paranormal. A mind change has been had with that. We are going to be calling it Season 21 because I think it's important that people know, who may discover us on whatever platform, just how long we've been doing this. It's no lie to say this anniversary season, if you will, has really given me a new appreciation for both this show, the listeners, our community, and the paranormal in general. The experience we're going to hear today is excellent, and I don't say that lightly. It was sent over about 4 months prior, and ever since reading it again, like every episode we've featured for season 20, it stuck in my mind. And I did place these episodes aside, knowing we were approaching season 20, and it being a landmark season, we were going to use these episodes. But we, of course, need episodes and stories and experiences for season 21. Now, at this stage in the game during a normal season, we've already got the following season mapped out. This is slightly different due to how we've now changed how you submit a story. So, although we do have an episode per episode, if you will, or an experience per episode, we do need more. And that's simply so we have choice, because we always want to present you with the best experiences that we receive. So, if you are sat there on your own true paranormal experience of any length, then either visit the show notes where you can find out how to submit, or go direct to the website, thedarkparanormal.com, and click on Submit My Experience. The power of sharing your paranormal experience can be profound. The number of people who start their experiences with, "I'm sharing my experience because I now feel brave enough after listening to so many people share theirs," is overwhelming. You are giving courage to people who've always remained silent. You're giving faith and validation to people who've experienced things they question their own sanity about. So never underestimate your contribution to somebody else's life. So please do submit any paranormal experiences you have by either checking the show notes or going direct to thedarkparanormal.com and then click Submit My Experience. Now, the numbering of the seasons isn't the only change that's been made. We've also made the call to keep the free trial week going for Patreon until the end of season 20. So, you now have up to Friday, the 18th of July, to trial the Patreon for completely free. If you don't like it, just cancel your trial before that week ends. But during that week, you can binge anything because it is the highest tier we offer. which means early access, it means ad-free episodes, it also means access to Dark Bites, with over 100 hours of Patreon-only content. Also, by the very end of this week at least, we will have released the first edition of The Dark Vault, which is solely a YouTube side project, and the only people who receive audio of that is our Patreons. So now is the perfect time to go to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal and check your free trial out, or just sign up and support the show. Just like the following wonderful new team members have: Amanda, Rosie, Simply Peter, Origami, Sergio Vega, Kristen Ann, Emily, Mark, Tony, Linda Pruitt, Marianne Sell, Irish Wristwatch, Claude Marbus, Odette Creeth, Jojo, Howard Grimshaw, Nicole, John Tamine, Ra, Josh Mitchell, Rita, YOLO, Treating Myself, and Desmond Verdi. Thank you so, so much, guys. Genuinely, supporting the show via Patreon allows this show to flourish and continue and grow. Things like The Dark Vault, which is to come, wouldn't be possible without your support. You are almost producers of the show, and genuinely, words do not do justice to how I feel when somebody supports what I do, what we do. So like one of our new Patreons said, treat yourself, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time to lower the lights, make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door, as we hear all about An Inheritance of Evil. Hi, I've been listening to your show for about 6 months now, ever since what happened to us started making sense. Well, as much sense as any of this can make. You always say this show is a place where people can share their experiences without being judged. So, here it goes. This isn't easy to write because I'm still not entirely sure what happened to us. Was it supernatural? Was it my girlfriend having some kind of breakdown? Or was I losing my mind? Maybe all three. But I need to get this down somewhere. And after listening, your show feels like the right place. I've changed our names, but not the locations. 6 months ago, Kelly and I, my partner, were living in a cramped one-bedroom flat in Greenwich, London. Nothing special, just expensive London rent and paper-thin walls. I'm an artist, which pays good at times and awfully at others. I work mostly with oils, some mixed media, and Kelly, my partner, works in digital marketing. She's in the kind of job where she just needs Wi-Fi and a laptop. We'd been together about 2 years. We met at a Wiccan circle in Camden. Although Kelly's not really into that stuff anymore. She says she grew out of it. But back then, within that group, she was noted as the most gifted one out of all of us. She could read people like books. She always knew when the phone was about to ring. Things like that. To be honest, it made me a bit jealous. Anyway, our landlord in Greenwich decided to cash in on the property boom, and everyone in the apartment block was given 2 months' notice. We were panicking about where to go, and within a week, Kelly received a call from a solicitor in Wales. Her great uncle and aunt had died. They'd left her their cottage. Now, she'd only met them once, apparently, at a family funeral when she was about 12. But there wasn't much of Kelly's family, and now there was very little left. Both of her parents were dead. She had no siblings. Her mum and dad had siblings, but no children. So to say it was a very small family would be an understatement. This great aunt and uncle were on her father's side, meaning with her father being dead and his one sibling also being passed away, she was the only blood link to this couple. The solicitor explained to Kelly that there was a list within their will of who the property should go to, and if they were no longer alive, it should go to the next down. And because of the small amount in the family, Kelly was top of that list. In all honesty, it felt like kismet. The timing was just fate. Kelly had inherited this little stone cottage in Anglesey, right on the coast overlooking the Irish Sea, plus about £15,000. Not life-changing money, but enough to give us some breathing room whilst we decided what our next move would be. So we decided to move into the property whilst we figured out those next steps. Like I say, Kelly could work from anywhere, and I thought the sea views may inspire some new paintings. I should have paid more attention to how Kelly reacted when she first got the call. She went very quiet. She told me she barely remembered her aunt and uncle, except to say they seemed old-fashioned. When I asked what that meant, she just shrugged and said that that house, which she visited that one time after a funeral, was extremely cold, even though outside it was an absolute heatwave. The cottage was a good few hours from London, be it by train or car. Kelly had to go to Bangor to sign papers with the solicitor, so I went on ahead with a moving van to begin the unpacking of things before Kelly arrived. The city centre, if you could call it that, because Anglesey isn't huge, was driven through by myself, and then a small village, and then the houses became more and more sparse. Eventually, I arrived at this kind of hamlet sort of place. Exactly what you'd picture. Grey stone walls, slate roof, tiny windows with thick glass that made everything look wavy. I should have just absorbed just how beautiful this image was, but my only thought at that time was I've left cosmopolitan London and travelled with my lesbian partner to this tiny village on an island. And I was more worried about how that would be perceived than what I really should have been worried about, which would soon make itself very clear. The place had one bedroom, a sitting room with a massive fireplace, a kitchen that hadn't been updated since the 60s, and a little studio space that had been converted from what might once have been a pantry. This was early October, still warm enough during the day, but really cold at night. The cottage had storage heaters that would take forever to warm up. So I spent the first few hours just moving boxes in, turning those heaters on, and trying to get the place habitable. Without being too cliche, as a creative person, I'm naturally messy. Until it comes to my art supplies. So, whereas all my clothes, books were just thrown into boxes, I knew exactly where my brushes and paints were, and my canvases, and they were secure, or should I say, more secure than everything else. So I sat in the living room, unpacking my art supplies, when it happened. I'd just opened the box of canvases and was leaning over to lift one out, when I felt it. That feeling like someone had sprinted across the room and stopped right behind me. That rush of air you get when someone runs past you, but this time they stopped inches behind my back. I spun around. Nothing there. The room all empty, beside the boxes. All the windows were closed. No doors slamming, nothing like that. But I could swear I still felt the air moving. Like whoever had rushed up to me was still stood there, just not visible. My skin went cold all over, and it wasn't just the cottage being chilly. This was different, like stepping into a freezer. Eventually, I checked the windows again just to make sure they were shut properly, and they were. So I tried to shake it off. It's an old house. It's an unfamiliar sound and feeling, possibly just the wind finding some gap in the stonework or the chimney. But for the rest of the afternoon, I was looking over my shoulder. Every time I bent down to unpack something, I'd spin round. Despite hearing nothing to make me do so, I was just thinking maybe I would catch whatever that was in its act. Kelly got back around 7 p.m. She looked tired and stressed. She'd had to take 2 trains and then a bus, then walk 20 minutes from the village with her overnight bag. I wanted to tell her what had happened, but one look at her face made me decide I could wait. "How did it go with the solicitor?" I asked, helping her with her bag. She sat down with a plop on the sofa. "Bit more complicated than I thought." "What do you mean?" I asked. Kelly was quiet for a long moment, staring at the cold, unlit fireplace. "Should we just go to the pub?" she said. That brought some anxiety on me, again the lesbian situation in a small village. But my worries were absolutely pointless, as every pub we visited, no one batted an eyelid. It was like this was perfectly normal round here, which made me feel rather ashamed that I'd placed this small town into a sort of homophobic box simply because it was a small town. That said, that fear originated from somewhere. When visiting a small town with Kelly, we did experience, well, a very different welcome, let's just say that. But Anglesey and its people were beautiful in ways looking back I can really appreciate now. So we find this lovely pub, log fire, dogs allowed in, it was really tranquil. And after getting us both a pint, we sit down and I say, "Okay, now you've had a drink, talk me through what happened." Kelly stayed quiet and then said, "My uncle didn't report my auntie's death." "Well, I don't understand, what do you mean?" "Well, my uncle died 2 months ago, okay?" "Yes," I said. "Well, my auntie died 8 months ago." "Okay," I said, still not knowing where this was going. "My point is," said Kelly, "he just kept her there, in bed. He slept next to her every night for 6 months, until he eventually took an overdose of sleeping pills." I felt my stomach drop. "Jesus, Kelly, that's horrible." The postman noticed mail piling up, so called the police. That's how it all unraveled. She rubbed her face with both hands. "The solicitor said it was all legal, everything still goes to me. But Christ, 6 months with a corpse." She stared into space and I moved round so I could put my hand on hers. "I'm so sorry, that must have been awful to hear." "It was," she said. "The worst part is, I can't remember them properly. I've got that vague memory of the funeral and the cottage. I know he was a big man with these hands like shovels, and my aunt was tiny like a bird, barely coming up to his chest. And she would apologise for everything, according to my mum. The tea being too weak, maybe the biscuits were stale, everything was sorry, sorry, sorry." We sat in silence for a while. And again, me being me and rather selfish, I thought about telling her what had happened while she was gone. But given what she just informed me, it would seem rather, as we call it, 11 a reef. In brackets, that's a joke we have when someone tries to outdo someone because of the place called Tenerife. So if somebody tries to outdo someone, we say they've pulled an 11 a reef. And this was not the time nor place for one of those. Besides, it was probably all nothing. Old houses make strange noises. This house was made of stone, for Christ's sake. I was likely just edgy because of everything that had taken place over the last fortnight. And what was I going to say? You'll never guess what, today I felt a breeze. It really wasn't the place. But as we got ready for bed that night, I still couldn't shake that rush of air feeling. The feeling of someone stopping just behind me. And for some reason, I couldn't shake the image of Kelly's aunt. The way she described her, always apologising, living in this cold stone house with a man who I think scared her. Though I've nothing to back that up at this point. 6 months he'd slept next to her dead body in this house. Probably in the bedroom we were just about to sleep in. Well, I didn't sleep well that first night. The cottage settling down with its noises, noises I wasn't used to. Every creak sounded like footsteps. But it was more than that. Even with Kelly beside me, even with the heating finally starting to work, this bedroom felt too big. Like there was space for more people than just us. Again, I told myself this was all the stress of moving, the shock of Kelly's news about her aunt and uncle. But deep down, I knew something or someone had rushed up to me in that sitting room. Something that had been waiting in this cottage, watching me. And now, we were here to stay.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
The first week passed quietly enough. Kelly threw herself into work, taking video calls from the kitchen table and swearing loudly when the broadband would let us down, while I explored the cottage and the village. I found a beautiful small art supplies shop about 40 minutes drive from Beaumaris and stocked up on oils and canvas boards. The light from the sitting room window was perfect in the mornings. That soft, grey Welsh light that makes colours look deeper somehow. I started painting the view from our bedroom window. Just the sky and the sea, nothing fancy. But something about putting brush to canvas in that cottage felt different. The paint seemed to flow easier. Colours blended in ways I hadn't managed to achieve before. Kelly said it was probably just the change of scenery inspiring me, and I went with that. But that's when the weirdness really started. I'd been working on this seascape for maybe 3 days when I noticed something rather odd. I'd painted the horizon as a clean line, a blue-grey sea meeting a lighter grey sky. But when I came back to it the next morning, there was a smudge. A dark mark on the horizon. You could say it was like a ship or maybe a rock. I stared at it for ages. I was absolutely certain I didn't paint it. As I wore the same shirt to paint, I checked the elbows, etc., for any sign of where I may have knocked it. But no, my shirt was spotless. So I leant in closer to look at this smudge. And it wasn't a smudge. It was clearly painted. The brushwork was different than mine. Rougher. More urgent than how I would ever paint. But Kelly was the only other person in the cottage. And she'd been on calls all evening. The next morning, over breakfast, I said to Kelly, "Did you touch my painting? You know, the seascape?" She looked up from her laptop. "What? Touch your painting? Why would I?" "Well, there's something on it that I don't remember painting." Kelly walked out to have a look at the seascape. I followed her. "That little dark bit. Well, maybe you did it without thinking. You know how you get in the zone when you're concentrating." I did want to argue, but she also had a point. Sometimes I would work almost unconsciously, especially if I was in the zone. I managed to scrape the mark off and repainted the horizon clean. I came down the next morning, put on my shirt, and there are three dark marks. Definitely not ships nor rocks. They looked almost like figures standing atop the water. And given the previous conversations, I knew I hadn't painted them. Also, this time, the technique was different again. Not a brush, seemingly a finger was used. I didn't tell Kelly about the second time. She was already far too stressed about work, trying to manage London clients from rural Wales with the dodgy internet. And besides, I was starting to have a horrible thought I simply did not want to voice. As I mentioned earlier, back when we first met, Kelly had been incredibly gifted at psychic things, automatic writing, even remote viewing. Even, I believe, some minor telekinesis when she really focused. She'd always insisted she couldn't control it, that it just happened when she was emotional or stressed. What if being back in Wales, in this cottage with its grim history, was bringing those previously dormant abilities back to life? What if she was unconsciously affecting my paintings? The next morning, I set up a test. I painted a simple still life, just an apple and a mug on the kitchen table. Nothing at all that could be interpreted as supernatural. I even took a photo of it with my phone before going to bed. I woke up at 2:30 a.m. to the sound of rain smashing against the windows. Real Welsh rain. The sound was more like gravel being thrown at the windows. I lay there listening to it, and then I swear I could hear something else underneath the sound. Like someone moving around downstairs. I nudged Kelly. Can you hear that? She mumbled something and rolled over, dead to the world. So I crept downstairs, my heart hammering. The sitting room was pitch black. But I could vaguely see my easel silhouetted against the window. I slowly crept in and turned on the lamp. The apple in my painting had a bite taken out of it. No, not painted. The canvas was actually torn. Like someone or something had tried to bite through it. I ran back upstairs and shook Kelly awake. Kelly, Kelly, come now, you need to see this. What is it, Amy? It's the middle of the night. Someone's been in the cottage. They've been destroying my paintings. Kelly groaned and followed me downstairs, full of disbelief, rubbing her eyes, and then she saw the damaged canvas. Christ, she said. Rats? I mean, who would do just that? But I was watching her face, looking for any sign that she remembered doing it herself. Sleep painting, or whatever you'd like to call it. But she looked genuinely shocked. But I suppose she would, wouldn't she, if this was all unconscious? Do you think we should call the police? Kelly asked. I thought for a moment and then said, and tell them what? Someone broke in and bit through my painting. We looked at each other and done the only thing we could do, which was go back to bed. Although neither of us got any sleep. The next day, I decided against my better judgment to test my theory properly. I waited until Kelly was deep into her work, and then I started a new painting. This time, I painted her. Just a simple portrait from memory. I thought I'd paint her sitting at the kitchen table with her laptop. I worked for about an hour, completely absorbed, and the likeness was coming along nicely. Much better than I'd managed before. When I stepped back to assess it, I noticed Kelly's call had ended and she was stood in the doorway watching me. God, how long have you been there? I asked. Just now? It's good, Amy, it's really good. But her voice sounded strange, distant. I looked back at the painting. The Kelly I'd painted was no longer sitting at the laptop. She was stood up, her arms raised above her head, mouth open as if screaming, and her eyes, I definitely hadn't painted her eyes like that, were completely white, like pebbles had been placed in their sockets. Kelly, I said slowly, what do you see when you look at this painting? She moved slowly closer, frowning, like she'd missed some hidden prank I'd put in the painting. Well, me, sat at the kitchen table, staring at the screen, working on my laptop. Why? I stared at her. And where are your arms? Again, she leans in, squinting. On the table. I'm typing, aren't I, by the look of it? I stared back at the canvas. She still stood up, arms raised, screaming mouth, pebble eyes. She was seeing something completely different from what I was seeing. Either one of us was losing our minds, or something in this cottage was playing games with us. That evening, I found an old photo album in the bedroom wardrobe, full of pictures of Kelly's aunt and uncle. Aunt Maud was exactly like Kelly described, tiny, bird-like, with frightened eyes. In every photo, she was either looking down or glancing nervously at whoever was taking the photo. Uncle Reese was massive by comparison, dark-haired and stern-faced, and any photo he was in with Maud, one heavy right hand on her shoulder. In the last few photos, Maud looked ill, thinner, even more fragile, her eyes completely hollow. There was one picture of her in what looked like the sitting room, stood in front of an easel with a paintbrush in her hand. I'd no idea she was an artist. Kelly, I called. Yeah? Did you know that your aunt painted? There was no answer. Kelly was in the kitchen. She'd just begun another call with London. I looked more closely at the photo. Maud's painting looked like a landscape. But there was something odd about it. Dark figures scattered across what should have been an empty field. I felt a chill that had nothing to do with the cottage's drafty windows. After that, the activity escalated. It seemed to happen most often when it was raining, or when I was alone with my paintings. Brushes would be moved overnight into different rooms. Finished canvases would be turned to face the wall. I'd find handprints in wet paint that were too small to be mine or Kelly's. And always, Kelly would walk in and things would just return to normal. She'd find me staring at a painting that had been altered, and when she looked, she'd see nothing wrong. To give an example, a former field I'd painted, I was staring at because it now had five dark lines resembling figures in the distance, and she couldn't see them. I began to feel like I was being deliberately isolated, like something wanted to drive a wedge between Kelly and I. The worst incident happened 2 months in, literally just before we left that place. Kelly, due to the broadband activity or lack of, had found a flat in Manchester, deciding to place the cottage on Airbnb. Kev, I've provided a link, but I'd please ask you not to share. We were due to leave the next morning, and I was in the sitting room packing up my art supplies for the last time. It had been threatening rain all day, and around 8 p.m. it finally started. Just a light drizzle at first, and then heavier. Kelly wasn't home, and I found myself getting anxious. Which was stupid. What could happen on our last night? But as it seemed to come with the rain, my anxiety did make sense. But as the rain got more fierce, I felt that familiar chill creeping through the room. I looked at my easel, where I'd left one final painting, a view of the cottage from outside the cottage, something I plan to take to Manchester to remember this place by. As I watched, a figure began to appear in the top left cottage window, our bedroom. It was being painted by an invisible hand, an invisible brush, but the strokes were appearing in real time. A small woman with wild grey hair, seemingly pressing her face against the glass from the inside. I just couldn't move. I could only stand there watching as this figure developed. Then it developed one tiny hand, as if knocking on the window from the inside, desperate to get out. That's when Kelly came home from her final trip to the village. I looked at the door, back at the painting, and even to me the painting had returned to normal. Just the empty cottage facade. "Thank God you're back," I said, my voice shaking. Kelly looked concerned. "Amy, you're as white as a sheet. What's wrong?" I tried to explain, but just saw a perfectly normal painting of an empty cottage, and so did she. We went to bed early, both claiming it was a hallucination through exhaustion from packing and all the stress of moving to Manchester, leaving this place behind. Again, I woke around 2:30 a.m. I couldn't sleep. I went to nudge Kelly, but she wasn't in bed. I could hear movement from the sitting room. The scrape of a chair. The tap of a brush against the water jar. I crept to the top of the stairs, and again, it took me a while to make anything count in that sitting room as it was pitch black. But once my eyes adjusted, I could see Kelly sitting in front of my easel, painting. Kelly had never painted, ever. Her back was to me, but something about her posture was wrong, too straight, too still. "Kelly," I whispered. She didn't respond, just painting with small, precise movements. I came down a few steps. "Kelly, what are you doing?" That's when she spoke. But it wasn't her voice. It was older, much older, with a thick Welsh accent that made the words sound strange and formal. "Go back to sleep, dear." My blood went cold. "Kelly," I said, slightly louder now. She sighed and placed the brush down very slowly and then turned around even slower in her chair. In the darkness, I could see her face, but her eyes were not right. Instead of pupils, they were luminescent, a faint light, like two small moons floating in her eye sockets. The light seemed to move, rotating slowly like pearls in water. "Or I could get the belt," she said in the same voice, but angrier now. "That'd shut you up quick enough." She spun back to the painting, but as she did so and stopped in front of the painting, her whole body went rigid and she fell backwards off the chair, like as if a figurine had been pushed. I ran down the stairs and hit the light switch. Kelly was unconscious on the floor, her eyes normal again, no sign of that strange light, and I was shaking her awake. "Kelly, Kelly, come on," slapping her face gently. "What happened? What happened? Why am I on the floor? Why am I downstairs?" she groggily asked. I helped her up, my hand shaking. On the easel was my cottage painting, but now it showed that small woman more clearly. This time, not in the window, but leaning against the cottage doorway, now open, and the silhouette of a large man gripping her shoulder with something dangling from his other hand. We left first thing in the morning, and Kelly didn't remember anything about painting in the middle of the night. When she looked at the canvas, she insisted that was the painting she'd seen when she walked in the other day. including the woman and the man, who, by the way, by morning time, were now smiling side by side on the doorstep. I never told her what I think happened that night, that somehow Aunt Maud had been trying to communicate through my paintings all along, that she'd been trapped in that cottage with Uncle Reese for 6 months after death, just as she'd been trapped with him in life. And that night, she'd found a way to show me the truth through Kelly. We've been in Manchester for some months now. Kelly's doing amazingly well, back to her old self, but sometimes I catch her looking at me strangely, like she's trying to remember something just out of reach. And my paintings have never quite been the same since. Twice now, I've been working on something completely ordinary, and I'll step back to find I've painted small figures in the background without realizing it. Yet, I can recall doing it. Both times, they're tiny women with frightened eyes. I don't know if Aunt Maud found peace, if she's still trapped in that cottage, or if she moved with us. Thank you for reading this so far. I've heard others say it, but I didn't realise how true it is. It helps to write it down. Also to think, or should I say, hope, that maybe someone out there might understand what we went through and may find themselves not so alone. Love and light, Amy. Amy, wow. And I know I say wow quite a lot these days because the experiences we're getting through warrant that response. But this experience, like I say, I've sat on it until this season simply because it blew me away. And for those wondering about the Airbnb, I can't simply because Amy's asked me not to give out any details about it, but I can say that I am going. So that should be something I will both be terrified of and look forward to, and of course report back to you anything I do find. Amy's also shared with me some reports, or should I say reviews, of people who've stayed in the Airbnb. Some of them are nice. Some of them are horrific in terms of what people have experienced. And I explained to Amy that would imply that the spirit there is still there. However, she quickly pointed out she thinks maybe Maud has travelled with her and Reese has been left in that place he slept with his dead wife for 6 months. Either way, Amy, thank you so, so much for such an amazing experience. Now, don't forget, guys, if you're sat on an experience that you think would be absolute gold for season 21, please do send it in. Go to our website, thedarkparanormal.com, and click on Submit My Experience, or follow the link in the show notes. And of course, to anyone who's not yet tried your free week trial of our highest tier of Patreon, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. And until next week, for our penultimate episode of season 20, take care, stay safe, and remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try to leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, for the second to last time this season of The Dark Paranormal.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at amfam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.